All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NBA podcast for Friday, November 18th. That is
James Davis.
He's done chewing. And I'm Doug Norrie, and we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. And here to help you get started or continue winning on FanDuel or DraftKings NBA, we have optimal lineups from our projection system, and those are powered by Lineup Lab, which will calculate optimal lineups for both those sites, FanDuel or DraftKings, and help you just get started and clarify some of those decisions you're trying to make on a nightly basis, which can be tough. Our system does that all for you. You're all set for 3 days and then $29.95 a month after that. We think you'll stay around. We offer the free-day trial because we're very, very confident that you will be there after the 3 days are up. So head over to the site, dfsr.com/membership, and those include our NFL projections as well.
I want to say something also because you're trying to catch me off guard. I try to purposely plan my chewing to be done by the time it's my turn to say my name. Yep. And when you're a practiced professional like I am when it comes to this, you know exactly when you need to be done chewing that last blueberry. So I really don't appreciate you, you know, taking the professionalism from the podcast and making me go first.
Well, one of my favorite morning rituals is just trying to time this exactly perfectly. We always take it right up to the edge of the cliff. And then we're always, and hey, sometimes we don't get there, as evidenced by having to start and stop the podcast three times before we.
Well, that was not because I was chewing. That's because you were kept messing up. So,
all right, let's talk about Friday, full Friday slate of basketball today. Real quick, back to yesterday, very, very briefly. One thing that we always talk about in DFS, and really it's probably the most important concept in NBA DFS, are minutes. Minutes and usage rates, but really minutes is what drives a lot of that. And sometimes we can look at teams and we can wonder about, like, you know, where their rotations are going to go. And, you know, we have some coaches who just like to tilt pulled players. There's a couple examples like that. Earl Watson, we'll get to in a little bit. Jason Kidd is an example of this, where he will just not old Tommy Thibodeau, baby. That guy.
The Pelicans, the Magic. Typically, it's the worse your team is, the more likely your coach is to.
Not up in Minnesota. Now that we got Tibbs up there, he last night, I mean, the story for me for the night last night was, they're up 30 going into the fourth, and he's rotating his starters back in. He had the full – I think everyone but Rubio played – Rubio and Levine did not play, but Dang, Towns, and Wiggins just kind of saw their full allotment of minutes, and at times they were up by 30. I mean, is this like the single safest team in NBA? This was the ultimate test, right? The ultimate blowout. They're crushing Philly. And those guys all see basically a full allotment of minutes. Wiggins was great.
Yeah. I guess maybe if they're getting crushed, maybe they would have gotten pulled. Maybe he just wants to give that little taste of victory to feel what it feels like since they've been so bad this year. I just honestly have no idea.
Yeah. They did keep Towns and Embiid. I think that was actually part of it was, I think there was part of it where he wanted Towns to go up against Embiid because they were guarding each other down the stretch, which was a pretty fun matchup to watch. But anyway, it's just one of those things. There's some teams when we talk each day, we're thinking, you know, I actually even said in our chat room last night, I was like, if you can show me with like a pretty strong correlation that you figured out the Bucks minutes on a night-to-night basis, I'll just straight up hire you. So if there's someone that can show me like a 10-game correlation that you've figured out that you know where the Bucks minutes are going to go on a night-to-night basis, you can send your resume and that evidence over to Doug at DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, and we can talk about just getting you on board because I simply cannot figure that team out. All right, let's get on to a full Friday of basketball. We'll start with before we even start, there's a couple injury notes that are – it's 9:30 in the morning Eastern time right now. There are two, I would say, there's one very major injury piece and one slightly big injury piece. The big one is whether or not Anthony Davis is going to play. That probably changes the landscape of the entire night just on its own, whether he plays or not, which we'll get to. So we don't know.
Well, because it makes it so a power forward, you either have a must play like $11,000 guy or a must play $5,000 guy.
Right, exactly.
Is Anthony Davis a must play tonight?
I'm not sure about that. So he's the one. And also Dwight Howard is questionable to play, which does also affect the power forward position, coincidentally. Yep. So those are the two things that going into this podcast, we don't know. Keep that in mind as we go through the rest of the podcast. We'll start at point guard. I mean, the thing here is Russ. I was almost tempted last night when writing up the picks to just kind of be like, there's nothing else to write about him at this point, right? Like, I'm not sure how many ways. This is the trap we'd fall into sometimes with writing our baseball picks, right? Is that like, okay, well, it's the third night of Andrew McCutchen in Coors, and Andrew McCutchen kind of picked the worst guy who was bad this year. It's the third night of someone good in Coors, you know? I've already said it two times before. I'm not really sure of another way to say it. Is there any other ways, new ways to say, why, even for $11,400 on FanDuel, you just have to kind of play him?
No. There really isn't. I mean, I guess you could argue that he's not matchup proof. So, you know, weighing in on the matchup here, which is the Nets, which is an excellent matchup,
right,
is relevant information. But other than that, you know, it's you're locking him in for a triple-double. He's got higher upside than anyone, a higher floor than anyone. He's still not unreasonably priced. Just a great play.
Yeah, if you round up right now, he's averaging a triple-double. Like, he's like 9.5 or something like that on each of the rebounds and assists. So, look, you got on FanDuel, you have to play him. On DraftKings, they're getting the pricing a little bit more competitive, where it's getting a little closer. 12-3 is a lot of money. That's 25% of your cap. You really need some cheap plays to come in. I'm not sure it's a total lock. This is the case with Harden last night. Now, Harden, again, was amazing, so it ended up it's difficult, right? Like, on DraftKings, where the pricing is a little closer, and that's 25% of your cap, you really need some of those cheap plays to kind of come around before you can consider it. That being said, guys like him and Harden are the guys that you actually – no one else you would even consider it for, but he's definitely one of them. After him, you know, I put up Isaiah Thomas and Marcus Smart. Now, they go against the Warriors. They're playing at home tonight. The spread is only -6, and I guess it went up to -7 overnight. -7 for the Warriors, but in Boston. Do you think, you know, the Warriors are letting up a lot of points to their opponents? They're winning, but they are allowing, their defensive efficiency is not what it was in years past. Specifically, it isn't what it was even from last year. Can you play guys like Thomas and Smart with the idea that if they can hang, they're great values, but there is probably some blowout risk?
I mean, so it's tough on one level because on such a big slate, it seems like you can probably avoid blowout risk. Now, I haven't looked at the slate closely enough. You did the picks last night, but mm-hmm. It seems like there are a lot of games potentially that won't go in the blowout direction. And so I don't know that you need to do it. But actually, as I look down in the over-unders, the Clippers are a 7.5 favorite. The Spurs are a 7-point favorite. We don't have lines on several games thanks to, you know, potential just injury issues, and then Cleveland's a 9-point favorite. Indiana's a 7.5. This is actually one of the closer spreads on the night.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I was gonna say Russ is -9. I mean, so it's like
right, exactly. So I think this is you're getting safety by playing in this game. I think. I mean, the Warriors this year just an 8-point differential, and I think you know a lot of people keyed in on their improved offense, and their offense is almost certainly improved this year and will be going forward, but. The real story in the Warriors in the past was their defense. I mean, they were an excellent defensive team. We keyed in on this early, how both Steph and Clay seemed to have lost some of those hustle stats, you know, the rebounds, the steals, stuff like that. And, you know, they're allowing, 4 more, 5 more points per game this year. And that's meaningful enough to keep games close.
And I think that's a byproduct, not so much of those guys, but of losing Bogut and Barnes and having Iguodala on the court slightly less, just because it's not like a natural fit for him as much with Durant on that team. So
yeah, probably more Iggy, I guess. I mean, Durant is not a bad defender. He's not a significantly worse defender than Barnes by any means.
No,
but Iguodala is probably a relatively decent upgrade.
And Pachulia and Zaza is not as good as Bogut. So like there are some other issues there. I like the Celtics a lot. Like they will have to probably play at a fast pace this year. Smart and I put Smart and Thomas on there. They're there for different reasons for me. Smart is more of like that hustle stack kind of guy. Like he can, like you don't need to key in on one specific thing that he does to sort of hit value or to keep his floor high, because he will just sort of, it kind of depends. It's like night dependent on him. Like some nights he's been scoring, he actually will rebound a decent amount. He has assists. Like he can kind of do everything. The steals are just kind of elite level steals, which is actually pretty good in a fast paced game to have something to have like that to fall back on. So I actually like him a lot. Thomas, he needs to really, the story with Thomas for me is, the way he hits value is the exact reason the Celtics would be able to stay in the game, right? Because they're going to need him to score and kind of score a ton. So if he's a little bit more variant for me than Smart is, but I like them both just because of the matchup. And the other guy I had down there was Teague. Teague's facing the Suns. I mean, the Suns are just so brutal on defense. Like they're allowing some crazy number of points above defensive points above average to opposing point guards. Do you get worried about guys like Teague who are in offenses where he's like not the focal point? He's not the second option even really. I mean, he might be the third. It kind of depends on the night.
Yeah, I mean, it does depend on the night. But he does enough around the points that you're not too worried, I think. I mean, he's arguably can be a plus rebounder for the position on the right night. You know, he's solid assist guy, if not spectacular for the position. But really, it's a price thing, right? I mean, $6,500 is not what you pay for elite point guards. And, you know, back-to-back games at 35 or more fantasy points on FanDuel. He's got a 51-point performance this season. Certainly a little bit erratic. You know, they do have a lot of mouths to feed, a lot of guys who would be happy to take more shots probably. But given the right match, he's a guy I'll play in the right matchup, and that's certainly what you're looking at here with Phoenix playing the very fastest pace in the league and one of the, I think, the second or third worst defensive efficiency.
Yeah, Phoenix is brutal, and they will push the ball up the court so much. They have, I think Indiana has probably, what I would suspect is, just looking down this, their highest implied total of the year at about, right at around 113. I can't imagine this team has had a higher implied total going into the game. And what we want to look for a lot of times is with teams is pace upgrades. You know, we want to just find, because I was saying this to someone last night. I was saying, someone was like, oh, you know, you don't have such and such team, but they have the projected for the most points of the night. And I was like, right, but all implied totals are not created equally, right? Like, you know, yes, implied totals can only be compared to that team's base, right? So, like, it doesn't matter that the Rockets are, occasionally it does not matter that the Rockets are 117 points and the Jazz are 100, right? Because if the Jazz are usually at 90 and the Rockets are usually just at 117, that's where their prices are. And so you need to just factor that in when you look at just implied totals. Because I know some people will get worried, like, oh, this game is supposed to have a million points. How come, you know, down more players from these teams? Well, that's because that's what those teams usually do, and all those prices are locked in there. So just try to keep that in mind when you look at implied totals, and this is the highest one, I suspect. I mean, it's definitely the highest one so far this season, and maybe for the whole season, that we've seen from the Pacers.
Yeah, well, maybe it's time that we put forth something like a relative implied total or something, because I think you're spot on about that. A lot of times people will look, and so like a team like Utah is never going to be in the game with the highest total. They're just not. But their price is always is reflecting the fact that they play so slowly. Right. So when Utah plays against a super fast team like the Suns or whomever, like they're going to be good values. And that game's going to wind up being some sort of a middling total, because you have Utah as the very slowest team and Phoenix as the very fastest team. So yeah, just looking at overall implied totals and just taking the best players from those teams, it doesn't work nearly as well as it does in a game like a football, for instance.
On the shooting guards, I wrote him up last game and he was great. I mean, and then we ended up like kind of not playing him because we had adjusted some pieces of information in our system and it ended up being fine. But Oladipo finally kind of broke out of it last game against the Rockets. He was doing, you know, there was reason to suspect, there was reason for encouragement and there was reason for dismay on the side of Oladipo. The reason for encouragement going forward was that he'd been really shooting bad from the field, even worse than his own. He's not
explain a great why that's why that's a reason for encouragement, because people are going to hear that and they're not going to think that that's an encouraging thing.
Oh, because just one thing you can kind of bank on, not on a player by player basis, but in the aggregate, is that players will regress to their shooting means if like all things are pretty much equal, right? Like, right. You're not going to turn from a 50% field goal shooter to a 30% field goal shooter over the course of a season if you play enough. So it just simply won't happen. Now obviously the thing with Oladipo was he had a team switch. Now I argued that actually the team switch for his shot selection actually helped him, because in Orlando he was more of a ball creator, which is really, I'm not sure he's totally suited for that. I mean, he does that on the second team for the Thunder, but in the offense when he's on the first team, a lot of his shots are, you know, corner threes, you know, kind of edge threes that he's getting off Russ driving kicks, and that's much better than he was seeing in Orlando. He just wasn't hitting them. Now, the downside for him was, because he's playing more of a traditional shooting guard role, those hustle stats you mentioned aren't really there for him. He's not on the ball as much. He's playing off-ball defense because Russ is typically guarding the point guard, although they will switch on and off depending on who the person is. But those stats for him weren't there as much. So I was both encouraged because I knew that I suspected the shooting would regress to his mean, but I didn't. And the reason actually we dropped this projection wasn't because of the shooting. It was because we had sort of updated some of our projections on his blocks and steals, specifically steals.
It's an assist too. And steals are all down.
We had updated some of the projections on that, and that's actually what dropped him. So anyway, he goes out, he crushes it. He gets another great matchup in Brooklyn. Do you think he ends up being like a chalk play because people are going to look at? I mean, he's still a good play anyway. But do you think he ends up becoming chalky because people are going to also look at that last game and be like, "This guy won you tournaments if you played him," and he just has another great matchup tonight?
Yeah, it showed nearly 10x points per dollar upside. Like, that's going to be something people are interested in. And it's funny with him because, you know, you and I had talked about him quite a bit. It really took essentially one game here. Well, two of his last three of shooting 67% from the field. And all of a sudden he's shooting 43%, yep, which is exactly his career average.
So, right. And this is just what happens. Like, this is just what happens
in the season. You just can't tear your hair out about that stuff. I mean, and there is, I think, such a thing as like being a rhythm shooter and getting used to shooting and creating different kinds of shots. But the fact that he, like, no player is worse if they're shooting more open shots. That's just not totally how it works. And yeah, I think he's a good play. I do think he'll be somewhat of a chalk play just because at shooting guard, it's Oof. Oftentimes very hard to find anyone who's anything like consistent, and that's no different tonight. So I do think he'll be a big time play.
It's very slim pickings at shooting guard tonight. I also wrote up DeRozan. I'm not sure I get there with him because of he's just expensive now.
Yeah, is he the payoff you want? I'm not sure.
Well, the thing with DeRozan is it's really interesting. So at the beginning of the season, we were kind of like, can't keep this up, can't keep this up. Maybe he's going to keep this up. I think he's going to keep this up. You know, like this has been like sort of like my graph of how my thought process on DeRozan has gone. Like he's, if you can verbally visualize a graph, but,
sure. You're like a real regular Dimitri Martin over there.
Yeah. Wow. Good reference. So with DeRozan, he's got a plus matchup against Denver. He just is such a high volume shooter, and the Raptors are playing a little faster this year. They're definitely getting out in the fast break a little bit more. Their overall pace isn't up, but their fast break they are getting more points off fast breaks. So it's kind of meeting in the middle a little bit with him. But they're defaulting to him. Their offense is just pass it to him. He drives and either goes all the way the three out. He's like a three true outcome kind of like shooter now. He's like drive the lane and get a layup. Drive the lane, pull up for short two. Drive the lane and get fouled. Like, that's just, like, those are the three things that are happening. Not on every possession for the Raptors, but, man, a lot of them. Do you think that, like...
17 free throws last game.
Yeah, exactly. But that's just, like, and it's not a totally crazy number. He's just doing that on a game-to-game basis. So, do you think it's worth kind of, at a position that's pretty tough, like, shooting guard is just not great. There's a lot of just bad names here. Do you think it's going to end up being worth it to sort of just, like, bite the bullet and pay the premium on him?
Yeah, I mean, that's always one of the toughest questions to ask. Like, basically, you're looking at a position and saying these mid-tier guys are very erratic, you know, a lot of variance around their performance. But the upper-tier guys, well, like DeRozan, you know, is as safe as apple pie and vanilla ice cream or whatever right now. Like, he's just...
Well, not for your heart. Those aren't safe for your heart, so you pick another reference.
No, they're totally safe. You can eat as much as you want. That's a new report just came out that's totally fine. That these social justice warriors have taken away our whatever. Okay, I'm moving on. DeMar DeRozan. So lock him in for 43 to 49 fantasy points for basically every game this season. I mean, he has got one game at 31, one game at 53. But by and large, he's like right there in the 40s. Now, that's not going to win you a big tournament, right? I mean, getting 45 points on 9,200 in salary is good, but not excellent. But the important thing about him, it's just the increased volume. And while I still maintain it's going to be hard for him to shoot 24 shots a game, he's doing everything he can to prove me wrong. The player profile is very similar, except he's just doing more of it. And as to the question, is tonight the night to pay up at shooting guard? I can't go there yet. I haven't looked deeply enough into the slate, but it sure looks like it could be possible. He's just so safe compared to some of these other options.
And like we said before, too, the Raptors just really have nowhere else to go. They have to play him and DeRozan. They have to play DeRozan and Lowry big minutes. They just don't have really any options. Their second unit's pretty trash. They don't have any ball creators on the second unit at all. And it's projected to be close, and the Raptors are just going to keep playing these guys minutes. They have to. I think they see their chances as kind of like real in the East. And, you know, the fact that they played it close with the Cavs the other night, I think they feel like they're probably a pretty good team. But they're good because they're going to need to run these guys major minutes. And there's a high floor in the minute expectation. Just like, I'm
sure,
just
gonna, we haven't touched on the matchup either. I mean, Denver playing the sixth fastest pace.
You got there.
Easy for me to say.
You got there.
The bottom 10 defensive efficiency too. So the fact that they're both fast and bad never hurts.
A couple other guys to consider, just going to blow through these guys. Etwan Moore, if Davis were to sit out again, he put up a ton of shots in that offense. There's a lot of shots to go around in the Pelicans offense if Davis sits, and he does get the looks and he got some minutes. He's got a decent matchup against Portland. I mean, J.J. Redick against the Kings, though, that's just mostly a price play. So a couple other cheaper options, but I think really when it comes down to it, I'm going to be looking at guys like Oladipo, DeRozan, and I don't know, maybe just a cheaper option kind of down the chain. All right, let's go on to small forwards. The other guy, there's a couple high-priced options tonight. Westbrook being one of them, DeRozan being one of them, Durant being the other, I think. I would, right now, and I kind of, sometimes you're forced to choose these guys because sometimes we look in tiers and say, would I rather have this guy or this guy in the same tier? Because I don't want to write up all the most expensive guys because I'm not sure that does readers a service.
Because in many cases, you shouldn't play both. You should just pick the best high priced shooting guard.
Right. And I got to say, I do. After that. We've always prided ourselves on just kind of picking a lane in our picks and just going there, like just not kind of carpet bombing the entire NBA and saying these are all the guys you can consider tonight. Look, we stand by the picks. Now, in the end, the proof's in the pudding with the actual system. So if you, some people will say, well, I played so-and-so, but he didn't play. Well, this is where you have to get the system. We write the picks up as a baseline to start. So I picked Durant over LeBron. Do you think, just on its surface, do you think that's correct here, considering the matchups?
I think probably. I mean, again, the game has a tighter spread. It rates to be a little bit faster paced. I think Durant, generally speaking, has higher upside than LeBron, although I would say, as I'm looking down the game log, maybe you're not even sacrificing safety. Durant's, in spite of the new scenario, like he's rebounding like an animal, upping the assists this season. So sure, yeah, I think it probably looks better almost across all angles.
Yeah, Durant's points per minute are like nearly identical to what he was doing in OKC. I was looking at this last night. Like his points per minute, rebounds, like all of his stats per minute are nearly identical to what he was doing last year. He's just the same player. Like you always wonder about team shifts and what's going to do to a guy. Like, we mentioned that with Oladipo. Hasn't been the case with Durant. He's the same guy. Like he's just
a gravitational force. Like if he's on your team, you just can't help but get him 20 shots a game.
You know, it also helps with Durant on FanDuel. He's $400 cheaper, and those $400 matter. So our system likes Durant significantly more. It's always funny when we look at our optimal lineups this early in the day, and we see guys like Westbrook, Durant, and DeRozan. Those three guys are in, some combination of them is in the top two lineups already. It's very difficult to imagine getting away from that, although there are some extenuating circumstances. So, yeah, I love Durant today, small forward. The other guy I wrote up Harrison Barnes. Barnes is against Memphis. It never feels good to play a guy against Memphis. But with Barnes, like Barnes is a guy who switches teams and is a totally new player now, right? Like he is, he's just totally different. Like he's just not the same guy that he was in Golden State. He's the man now. They lost, the Mavs are without J.J. Barea. I should have mentioned, I could see Seth Curry being a play at shooting guard too if he were to get more minutes because Barea is out now. And D-Will played almost no minutes. I should have mentioned that. But anyway, Barnes... Barnes has been without Dirk. The shot totals have been crazy high.
He's doubled his shots from last season.
Right, exactly. Like he's the guy now. Like he's the usage guy. Now, when you look at something like that, but then we look at a team like Memphis who plays sort of like that, just kind of like grind it out, super slow. Them in Utah, we don't really want to target guys against them. Do you think at some point the price just like hasn't caught up with what Barnes is doing for Dallas and the way that, their personnel issues right now, which they have significant personnel issues?
Yeah, I think that you're right that a lot of it is that the price hasn't totally caught up this season. Another note about Memphis, that they're not as strong defensively as I think a lot of people picture. With 105.4 defensive efficiency ratio, that places them in the bottom half of the league. So right. It's not like the old, grit and grind. Was that the Tony Allen and Sebo thing? They're definitely still slow, and it's not a good matchup whatsoever. But our system will spit guys like this from time to time who says – not that they're matchup independent, but that they're like, this is going to be a pretty safe guy, pretty much regardless of who he plays, as long as he's at this price. And while that's usually punt-related plays, it'll occasionally get guys in the 6,000 range. One thing you should note about situations like this is it's like strictly a cash game play. There's not a lot of upside. Basically, when you're playing against a really slow team, it just kills so much of the upside just because of the fewer possessions. But yeah, I think it's reasonable. I don't know if you want to like fist pump slam dunk at home, but it's totally fine play.
I think the Memphis matchup will turn people off to that, and you make a great point. He's not going to go out and score 50 in this matchup. There's just not going to be enough times where he touches the ball, and we can see where it can go wrong this way, because in a slow matchup you only need a few things to go wrong and then you're kind of really running into trouble, because when every possession, at least from the other team, is running down to like 5 seconds on the shot clock each time, those games can be impossible to watch too from a DFS thing.
If he shoots 40% tonight instead of 50% like he has been this season, then all of a sudden he's not looking so hot.
The other guy I was kind of gravitating to was TJ Warren. Now TJ Warren kind of goes the opposite way of Oladipo for me in the sense of like just general industry consensus on him. Because last game, he was a pretty popular start, I believe. We did not play him, so I don't remember the exact percentages.
It was like 15%.
15? Okay, so not huge, huge.
But it was Wednesday, though, so it was like an enormous slate.
Gotcha. Against Denver, he gets tilt-pulled by Watson at 18 minutes and just doesn't see the court after the third quarter. This is a guy, up until that point, he's second on the team in shots. He plays a ton of minutes. They kind of just like need him going forward if they're just, they're a bad team, right? But he just is actually a guy they probably can think about building around, sort of. Do you see that 18 minutes as an outlier, or do you think that it's like so risky now that he's just going to get pulled like mid-game and just never see the court again?
I mean, it's potentially a combination of both. There's plenty of precedent for the guy who, you know, the team likes, they bring him in, they have a honeymoon period where they're doing well, and then all of a sudden, you know, a coach somewhere is like, oh, forget it, man. We just can't keep playing this guy. Like, TJ, you're not an 18 shots a game guy. Like, you just got to stop it. I know it worked out okay last game, but this is not how the offense is supposed to run. And then they're like, yeah, I'm TJ Warren, man. I'm just going to keep doing it. And then eventually they just give up. I mean, he'd already shot 11 shots in those 18 minutes when he got pulled. So, and he was also just shooting quite badly. So it could have just been one of those, hey, it's not your night, kid. Come on in and we'll let someone else take over. But I do think that they'll give him an extended leash here, again, on a big slate. This is kind of weird, though, because it's not like it's not created equally to most big slates, and that there are just so many blowouts on this, or potential blowouts on this slate. So, yeah, I could see playing him. I mean, certainly you got plenty of upside here, and reasonable safety minus last game, too. So it looks pretty good.
I mean, at times I sort of want to go out on a limb and just say this was a – that was an outlier game. I just can't figure it was anything else. They got, like, there's too many minutes, and it's not like they have all these young horses like running behind him vying for, I mean, it's like Jared Dudley comes in for him, so it's like it's not like you know, Jared Dudley's not the guy that you kind of want to build around going forward. So I think I'm pretty much willing to do it in cash, because I think that this game is going to be pretty high scoring and fast paced. But I think we end up might be on the contrarian side of that, just because people are going to see that 18 minutes and be scared off, which I totally understand. All right, on the power forward, I mentioned at the beginning how we were going to be sort of injury dependent on this position. Right now, if I never root for injuries, because that's just bad juju, but it would really help if Howard and Davis didn't play tonight, because at power forward on FanDuel, you get Terrence Jones, and I would be totally fine running out Mike Muscala again if Howard were to sit, because those guys are, you know, 5,000 and 4,300 respectively. If Davis weren't to play, Jones would be the ultimate chalk play for sure, just based on last game, and he was already high owned going into last game. Muscala was just fine on this price. I don't care about the matchup. 4,300 for a guy that's going to play 30 something minutes and gets some shots in the offense, it's a no brainer. Now, the problem is, if these guys don't play, you really are. I mean, this list is so gross. I cannot stand. Again, the theme of the podcast is when we get the power forwards, it's like, not only can you not play one, yeah, you definitely can't play two. Like, it just screws these like lineups up. If you X these guys out in our thing, you start seeing guys like Enos Kanter. I mean, can't trust that. I mean, again, I haven't done like a full minutes audit, so this could be a little bit wrong. What do we do with power forward here if both these guys are out of the mix?
Well, this is actually, I think there's a better case. We talked about this with DeRozan at shooting guard. I think there's a better case for paying up a little bit and getting some safety at this position. So I think you can start looking at guys like Draymond Green or Blake Griffin potentially. Both of those guys have plus matchups. You know, Blake been very consistent on his price point. If, again, not great upside. I mean, you're basically penciling yourself in for 4.5 points per dollar, which is not excellent. And Green's been pretty similar. I mean, 8,200, 34, 46, 36, 37, 41 fantasy points recently. You know, solid. And you're not excited either. So I think what you do is you hope for a punt play to creep its head up. And if not, you just understand that you probably have to play a little bit loose on the points per dollar thing so you don't get crushed.
Yeah, this is one I'm just going to kind of have to reserve judgment going forward. I don't know who – I mean, like the guys you mentioned, I would go Green over Griffin just because of the matchup, and just the matchup really is what really helps him, that the game should be so fast-paced. I mean, I was expecting –
like Thaddeus Young.
Yeah, he's interesting. Just like
he's been good. Like, he's been solid in the 5X, 4.5X points per dollar range.
Yeah, he has a good matchup with Phoenix. I get a little worried about his minutes because he's been buzzed off minutes in the past, where, you know, they'll go sort of just with different rotations. But again, it all speaks to just the general uncertainty at the position. And speaking of positions I hate, let's go on to center. This one was another one that was really tough to write up. There's just not this is a position that's just kind of devoid of like just high value guys. Kelly Olynyk was kind of a chalk play when he's starting for Horford. I'm not even sure he's a value anymore. Like, he's just not doing this and really do much at all in that offense, even when he has the minutes. So I'm not sure you can even, like, totally go cheap there. Like, what are you seeing, if anything, at center tonight?
Well, I think, you know, Olynyk still represents something, right? I mean, he had two back-to-back 7X points per dollar games against New York and Indiana, and then two pretty bad games against New Orleans and Dallas. But, you know, if the position is not excellent – you know, you can do a lot worse than escaping cheaply with a guy who in very, very recent times has paid off excellently for you.
Right.
After that, it gets a little bit dicier. I mean, there's like Steven Adams. Is that a guy you're looking at? I don't know.
I mean, I wrote him up. I wasn't feeling great about it. Like I wrote him up just because he plays minutes. Really at this point, I was just looking for guys like in that 45 to 5,500 range on FanDuel that just played, right? Like that you can kind of count on for 30 to 33 minutes or something like that. Adams fit that bill. Because the rest of these guys in that range, like Tyson Chandler, Cody Zeller, even Mason Plumlee, like I would love Mason Plumlee if I knew he could play 30 plus minutes a game. It's just not, you can't guarantee it because Portland will just do different rotations. Like he played 20, mm-hmm. he has a 23 minute and 21 minute game in his log. I mean, one of those was blowout, but it just can't, it's really, really tough to trust that. And then paying up for a guy like DeAndre Jordan, I just don't know if you want
to
go there.
No, it's not the night to do that.
Right. And like you get Jonas Valanciunas where I'm kind of like, I don't like, he played 18 minutes against the Golden State. So I just don't know. I don't know where the safety is here right now. Maybe something emerges during the day. This is the position. We could be really looking at least on FanDuel, a position where things shake out poorly and we're just kind of stuck with power forward and center and just thinking like, well, what do we do with three of these positions? Like, and I can definitely see that being the case tonight.
Yeah, it's funny how that happens on big slates. I mean, normally when you think of big slates, you figure you're going to wind up getting your money in pretty good and you can just get a guy you're happy about at every position. But yeah, the way, you know, these arbitrary position lines break down, it can get pretty dicey. Yeah, Plumlee is a guy I think is like fairly interesting. His minutes have been pretty erratic, but a lot of that has been due to game script considerations. Like, you know, 21 minutes against Chicago, but they lost by 30. You know, 23 minutes against Denver. I'm not totally sure what happened there. But then 35 minutes against Sacramento. Like, he could be safer than he looks on paper.
And he's interesting, too, because he doesn't accrue points in the same way traditional centers. He's not a traditional center, but he has a lot of assists. He passed really well out of the post. And yeah. I haven't looked at the exact number about center stats, but I suspect he's got to be the highest assist center in the league, I think, because he just passed really well out of the post, and that team
4.5 assists per 26 minutes this year. That's excellent.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So while not a traditional center, which is again why he sometimes doesn't see his minutes go all the way through, because he just is sort of not matchup proof kind of guy. Like there are certain matchups that are just not contingent on him playing. If I just knew he was going to play 30 minutes, I would probably just make him my cash game center. All right, that's it for us today. Really interesting day in the NBA. Big Friday slate. Really looking forward to it. A lot of news that's going to come down. Make sure you check out our site for our news and updates article, which usually gets posted around 2 or 3 o'clock, which will help flesh out some of the things that have come through during the day and mostly how it affects the lineups going in. And as always, you can go over and grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system where all the news is baked into our numbers in real time, where we're making adjustments constantly. The news comes in and we're adjusting teams' usage and teams' minutes to reflect it all. We think we're about the best in the business at doing that. It's why we have great user retention rate for this. It's why we've done nothing but grow. And you can become part of it now by free for 3 days and then just $29.95 a month after that. We'll be back next week doing probably a shortened week of NBA podcasts for the Thanksgiving break. And as always, you can always check out our NFL podcast as well, which we're going to record in a couple seconds. So, buddy, I'll talk to you then.
Can't wait, man.